it's kind of RoboCop-esque, where they took this really bad neighborhood and basically just built a wall around it.
Like Hamsterdam.
Yeah. And then a cop needs to go undercover in there, and they pull a guy who's in jail from that, who's just really good at
partying. Or like Escape from L.A. and or New York.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, so they go in undercover there, and like he's undercover as a cop, but he's known because he's from there, and he just happens to be really good at parkour.
Who hasn't heard that one before?
What's up? This is Movies on Up, the oddest couple ever unleashed. I am Dave, joined by the dog detective to my Jim Belushi, Ryan.
I was going to make dog noises, but I'm not that committed. What can I say?
Yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere. Anyways, I am Dave. He is Ryan. We are Movies on Up. The tagline for this week, the oddest couple ever unleashed. If you know what movie that is from, email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. Tweet us at moviesonup on the Twitter. Or Facebook us, facebook.com/moviesonup. If you are correct and we pick you, you win the glorious Movies on Up prize package. The infamous, most infamous prize package in all of podcasting, I think.
The alleged prize package. Allegedly Jim Belushi was in that movie? I don't think he was.
A different movie.
Oh, I see.
There was a run of those movies.
Different dog detective movie.
Yes. Yes.
I see.
Jim Belushi was the star of the K-9 franchise.
Yes, which is not our tagline for this week. There's a big, there's like six giant helpers for you. Basically, we just want to send out another prize package.
This episode, we don't know how to word what we are looking for as a list. We always have pretty straightforward lists.
Occasionally, it seems like we do.
Yeah, but this one, The Muppets come out this week. So we thought, what about a movie with co-stars that weren't humans? Is kind of one way.
Yeah.
I took it a couple. I don't know how you took it. We haven't really talked about it. I tried to avoid CGI co-stars. Like District 9 would have been one of the first ones to come to mind. I went for basically costumed co-stars. Characters that weren't human but were just people in costumes. That's the route I took. So I have my top five on that. How'd you come to, what were your criteria?
I just tried to think about movies that, because we did this not too long ago. They were like
we did robots.
Robots.
We were robot specific.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that most of the ones that come to mind immediately to me, the co-stars that are non-human are robots, and I like them a lot. So I basically threw all of those movies out, and I started thinking about animals specifically, because that just seems like it's the most logical place to start.
Yeah.
And then once the great ideas got flowing, it's just time to get out of the way. Let that list write itself.
Yeah, mine are all animal-ish and are mostly either, I think one of them is actually a puppet, but or whatever you call that. But enough about that. Ryan, your number five movie that fits the criteria of this list.
Well, this is really the only one that might be a little bit of a stretch, because I guess technically this is absolutely a human being, but it doesn't stay that way for very long. It is Griffin Dunne from 1981's An American Werewolf in London, directed by John Landis, starring David Naughton, the aforementioned Griffin Dunne, and Jenny Ogeter. The movie starts pretty much like a vacation comedy with Naughton and Dunne wandering their way through the English countryside, but like I mentioned, it does not stay that way for too long. A werewolf shows up. Spoiler alert, it turns David Naughton into a werewolf. Griffin Dunne kind of turns him into a zombie-type spirit who spends the rest of the movie mentally attached to David Naughton, basically rooting for his best friend to die so that he could be put out of the eternal damnation that he's kind of going through. Griffin Dunne becomes the comedic relief of what is a pretty good horror movie. John Landis has that comedic slant to just about everything he does. I thought the makeup effects were really cool because he is like half eaten and he kind of stays that way and degenerates throughout the rest of the movie. Dunne's delivery, very dry, very dark. I thought it really kind of added, not that, you know, David Naughton didn't have enough going wrong with his character. He was a wolfman. But when you add that element of a ghost following him around, rooting for him to die, it does kind of really stack the deck against the American Werewolf in London.
My number five, that's bad that I lost count already. I think I put it on a list recently. I don't remember what the list was for, but it's about the same thing. It is 1984's The Neverending Story. Speaking of Falcor, the luck dragon. Yeah, luck dragon that looks like a dog.
Yeah.
He was one of the first ones that came to mind because he's there on screen. The kid's acting with him. I don't think that one was a guy in a suit. I think that was more puppetry. But very cool. This movie just holds a special place because this has a lot of other non-human co-stars with it that are people in either makeup or costumes.
Just a horse.
Yeah. So Neverending Story was my number five. I wanted a Falcor growing up. I really did. I absolutely loved I wanted a giant dog that I could fly around on. But what kid didn't?
Maybe it's because I'm allergic to dogs. I just looked at that thing and
thought, are you allergic to luck dragons?
Gee, Dave, I don't know. They didn't test me for that. Although I would assume if you're equating him so closely to a dog, I probably would in fact be allergic to the dander of a luck dragon. Hopefully one day I'll be able to find out. Interesting segue. I'm allergic to dogs. I would absolutely be allergic to the non-human co-star of my number four film, It's Blood from A Boy and His Dog, 1975, directed by L.Q. Jones, starring Don Johnson, Jason Robards, Suzanne Betten. We've talked about this movie a bunch of times. But I don't care. I like it, and I won't go into it that much. I'm not a dog person by any means. That might change, though, if I had a telepathic dog that could quite literally sniff out women. Plenty of dogs in movies, and even a couple of talking dogs in movies. Very few I find as useful, not just in the finding women sense, but the trying to help a kid stay alive in a post-apocalyptic desert scenario. Pretty cool name for a dog, too, Blood. I like it.
I love this movie, and we bring it up. I don't know that anybody in the world, I don't know that you can find another podcast on the planet that drops A Boy and His Dog as much as we do, because we bring it up
all of our lists. We're just like, well, how
we
can we mention
find
a boy
ways
and his
to
dog
fit
this
A
week?
Boy and His Dog in? And I do stand by, like, as much negativity as remakes get, I would be so on board for a remake of this, for an update, for a retelling. I would be so on board with that. And if you could stay true to it and still bring the brutality and everything about the original.
And not mess with the ending.
Yeah, you got to keep that ending. It's so depressing. Speaking of another sad ending.
Or not.
We're going to go to my 1987. My number four, Harry and the Hendersons. Starring John Lithgow, Melinda Dillon, the mother from A Christmas Story. And Sasquatch, with the name Harry, played by Kevin Peter Hall. We talked about last week with the cop movies and like how Demolition Man and RoboCop were like they define an era of that kind of movies. Harry and the Hendersons is a perfect late 80s comedy because it does tackle all that. It's a ridiculous premise. Lithgow is Lithgow, and it's got a lot of heart to it. And I think a lot of people would forget about just how much heart is in this movie and just how enjoyable and fun it is. And with Bigfoot being on TV now, there's multiple reality TV shows about Bigfoot, which
Bigfoot's on TV.
That sounds like a big oxymoron, but there are multi reality shows about Bigfoot. Let that sink in for a second. But Harry and the Hendersons, way ahead of the Sasquatch craze,
but ahead of the curve. Yeah. The Squatch curve.
Yeah. But
as it's called,
just very, very fun movie. Very good. And maybe it doesn't hold up now, but it still has a place. And like I said, from that era of comedies, and especially family-centric comedies, it is among the best of that era.
Now, of the creatures that we've encountered thus far, I would love a pet Sasquatch, not so much a luck dragon. Maybe it's because Sasquatches actually exist. So if I were to wish for one, you know, it'd just be wasting your time to wish for a luck dragon. But a Sasquatch, on the other hand, you could see that wish being granted. My number three, starring a wish-granting genie. It's 1992's Aladdin, directed by Ron Clements and John Musker, starring Scott Wenger, Robin Williams, and Linda Larkin. absolutely perfect casting for the genie in this movie. Robin Williams pretty much is a walking cartoon character. He was completely unleashed and made what was already a larger-than-life character in the genie larger than life. I can remember when I was a kid watching reruns of Mork and Mindy, and that was really the first exposure I had to Robin Williams. And I thought he was such a goofball, so funny. I liked him a lot. By the time 1992 came around, yeah, I was in second grade, but man, I was into the thing. I was out of Disney stuff at this point. My sister, on the other hand, not so much. So I've seen Aladdin more times than I care to recall. But at the very least, I was always very entertained, especially as a kid, by Robin Williams. Gilbert Gottfried was really kind of good in the movie, too, as the parrot. This was one of the first things that came to mind with non-human co-stars, because technically the genie's not human. But I think that's such a good character, like a perfect Disney character.
Yeah, I mean, Aladdin was one of... I'm not huge on the Disney movies. I don't like musicals, so... I didn't grow up on Disney movies like most people, but Aladdin's one of those I like because Robin Williams was such a perfect Disney character. So was the parrot. I thought Gilbert Gottfried was perfect. So, I mean, those two characters are to me like iconic Disney characters. My number three, another iconic character. I talked about Harry and the Hendersons having a place in history as like one of those epitome of a late 80s comedy with heart. My number three has its own place in history. Maybe not as beloved as Harry and the Hendersons. It's known as one of the greatest bombs ever, one of the worst movies ever to touch the screen. But I legitimately love this movie. Maybe it's just because I love 80s Leah Thompson so much. It is 1986's Howard the Duck. I legitimately love this movie. I have it on VHS. I still watch it at least once or twice a year. I love it. It's silly. It's a dumb premise. Howard, I think, looks cool. It's just such a fun thing. And then Leah Thompson is being all Leah Thompson-y in the 80s, which I'll never not like Leah Thompson in the 80s. Yeah, Tim Robbins, Jeffrey Jones. Yeah, the story gets a little crazy, a little out there. And realize, we're starting with an alien duck, and it manages to get more ridiculous than that. But this movie will always have a place in my heart. I saw it in theaters twice. I would have been about 7 when it came out, and I love it. I adore it. I absolutely love this movie. But yeah, it definitely is a costumed co-star movie. And I really love this movie, and I don't feel like I need to justify it. I understand why it's so poorly received and why it is.
You understand that it's awful.
It's a punchline. I realize it's a punchline, but I absolutely love it.
Fair enough. From a movie from Dave's childhood that sucks to a movie from my childhood that was great. Starring, this is a guy in costume, not a duck costume, but a Frankenstein costume from 1987's Monster Squad, directed by Fred Decker, starring Andre Gower, Robbie Krieger, and Tom Noonan, who played Frankenstein. Pretty much the Goonies with Universal Monsters here. All the monsters were really cool, with the possible exception of the Mummy. I think that one kind of sucked.
Oh, the Mummy just sucks.
Yeah, fair enough. The relationship that Frankenstein had with the little girl Phoebe was really, really cute. She was kind of the outcast of the group because she was the little sister. And then she befriends this giant, over 7 feet tall, dead guy, or guy made up of other dead guys. They didn't just really play it for cuteness. I think that kind of befriending Phoebe was pretty true to the Frankenstein character. He has that scene in the original Universal movie. Once he escapes the castle, he meets up with a little girl. Now, it doesn't end very well for her because he doesn't really know what the hell he's doing. But by the time 1987 rolls around in this Frankenstein timeline, I like to think that he's kind of learned his lesson and he does things a little bit different the second time around. Not to mention, spoiler alert, that he helps save the world. That is something that no other character on my list can say. And I love Monster Squad. It is... I don't know anybody that has seen this movie and doesn't like it. And if I do know you, I don't want to know you. I'm going to unfriend you.
I do love Monster Squad. That's another one we bring up any chance we get.
Because it's great.
Yeah. My number two, probably.
Definitely.
Okay, my number two. It's a movie that Ryan just had on a list a couple weeks ago.
Was it A Boy and His Dog?
Similar. It's close. Close. If you're a furry, you're probably really into this movie. Based on one of my favorite books as a child. Very hard movie to adapt. Very hard book to adapt into a movie. But it is 2009. Spike Jonze is Where the Wild Things Are. Because you really do have this little kid actor and a bunch of people in suits. It's so well done. And, I mean, Gandolfini, the voice cast, this Max Records kid did fantastic for what he was asked to do. But then, yeah, you have Catherine O'Hare, or have James Gandolfini, Paul Dano, or some of the voices. And, I mean, Gandolfini, without being on screen, steals this movie. And such a unique take on the world. And, you know, Spike Jonze took the, I made the same point when you brought it up, that he took this great children's book and didn't make it a great children's movie. He made it a great movie for people who grew up loving the book. So it's not so much a kid's movie. It's for the kids that loved the book as a child.
Yeah, I don't think kids are going to be dragging parents necessarily to see Where the Wild Things Are. I think it's probably the other way around. Obviously, I wasn't a kid when I saw it, but I feel like, you know, a kid could still enjoy the movie. It's not maybe as whimsical and fun as a lot of kids' movies starring monsters are. I can think of some more Monsters, Inc. and Monsters, U. Those star monsters, but they're kind of more, ha-ha, look at how goofy they are. And Where the Wild Things Are was starring monsters, but there was something behind that, I think.
Yeah, and it took you to a whole new world. Spike Jonze created this universe and this world, and I mean, when kids are old enough to get it, like what the movie says is better than most kids' movies. I mean, there's a message there that it's
Be a jerk.
Yeah, it's a little more pertinent to growing up than the cookie cutter ones in most kids' movies. But I absolutely, this movie seems very divisive and very polarizing because it didn't get a lot of love when it came out. But I think the people that love it really, really love it, and the people that don't just don't care about it.
I think that's fair. Being Spike Jonze, it was interesting to see him do something that wasn't a music video or a Jackass thing. That's kind of where I started to perk up and go, all right, this guy is capable of doing some really neat things. That's really what got me excited at first to see her, even before I knew anything about the plot, was, you know, this guy has such a unique way to build a world and to put you in it, that I was interested to see what he was going to do with her. And as great of a job as he did, you know, building the world for the Wild Things, I think he kind of built that same world for Joaquin and her. So, good flick. I like it a lot. My number one is a movie that you like a lot, starring a character which I know you like a lot from both of our childhoods. It is 1990's Gremlins 2, The New Batch. Gizmo, great little character. Maybe that, if I couldn't have a Luck Dragon and if I couldn't have a Sasquatch, maybe I'd take a Mogwai or Phoebe Cates, for that matter. Zach Galligan back as well. John Glover this time around. I kind of thought that Gremlins might end up somewhere on your list, or maybe you'll leave it off because Gremlins makes a lot of your lists, and you know it's probably a bit on the nose anyway. But Gremlins 2, I can't help it. The little bastard's just so cute. I think a lot like the Caddyshack sequel, they took what worked, what tested very well from the first movie, and that was Gizmo, the Mogwai, and cranked up the cuteness quotient in the second movie. And I think it was really to the detriment of Caddyshack 2 and Gremlins 2. Those were not necessarily the reason that the originals were so good, but still, I have to put Gremlins 2 on my list. For no other reason than the paperclip Rambo scene. I love that. Gizmo, not necessarily helpless in the first movie, but when he really kind of nuts up and he's like, no, you jerk, I'll show you. Lots more Gizmo in this one, hence its place atop my list. I love that little guy.
And Gremlins obviously did pop in my head, but I tried to go more, other than Falcor, I tried to keep it to people doing the performance other than puppets. Because Falcor, I guess...
There's a man controlling that puppet.
No, I understand that. But I guess in my own head I justified leaving Gremlins off because Gremlins would pretty much be I could find
number one on any list.
I could find a way to make Gremlins number one on any list I ever do if you let me try hard enough. But yeah, Gremlins 2, I don't think it was the detriment of it because I've said before, I think Gremlins 2 is a perfect sequel because Joe Dante wanted to do something different. The problem with horror sequels and, you know, the Friday the 13th, the Nightmare on Elm Street, they've fallen into kind of the they fell into the trap of, like, how do you make it different enough to make it a sequel? You easily could have made a Gremlins 2 that's just another horror movie about these gremlins taking over a town, but he wanted to do something different, and they went a completely different direction where you lost most of the horror and just – in the first one, it was, you know, 70% horror, 30% comedy. You just reversed that in the second one. And it worked. I mean, it's a completely different movie. You watch Gremlins 2. There's no, what part was that in? Was that in the first or second one? Like, you know, there are two distinct movies, which, you know, you think of a specific death out of, you know, any horror sequel, and it's not always easy to remember which one it's from.
Well, what was the one where Jason kills the guy with the machete? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's easy to fall into that trap with horror sequels to where you're just making the same movie again because it was so good. And I liked the balls that Gremlins 2 had to just be like, we're not going to do that. And I still hold out hope for a Gremlins remake. My number one is getting a remake that I am not excited about. If you've ever heard me talk, this is probably easy. Like, you probably could have guessed that either Gremlins or this would have been number one. When you think of, you know, people in costumes and more specifically people in animal costumes, it is 1990s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I grew up loving the Ninja Turtles. Ninja Turtles and Ghostbusters were my loves growing up. And when this movie came out, I was more excited than I've probably been for anything in my life. And I saw it in theaters so many times because it was good. It wasn't just, hey, it's this cartoon I love, it's this comic book I love on the big screen. Like, it was a good movie. I watch it now with my kids and I still enjoy it. Yeah, some of the dialogue's a little too 90s for me and a little hokey, but overall, like, it was really good. They took the darkness that the comic book had, they added the goofiness that the cartoon had. It was like a perfect balance, and your bad guys felt legitimately frightening. Like, Shredder was a badass, which the cartoon never really portrayed. Shredder was more of a punchline kind of, but this had, you know, Shredder was a badass. You had the Foot Clan that's like, oh, yeah, I don't want to mess with those kids. And, you know, you had Danny who was just looking for a place to be accepted. And I just think one of the coolest things is when they go to the Foot Clan headquarters and it's video games and, you know, trampolines and it's all this stuff. It's like, oh, yeah, as a teenage kid, I want to
totally
go there.
I want to be in the Foot Clan.
Oh, you want me to rob some banks, but I could still come here tomorrow instead of going, all right, like, that was encapsulated perfectly. Elias Koteas, fantastic. Judith Hogue was April O'Neil in this one. Paige Turco in the sequel.
2 and 3.
Huh?
2 and 3.
Yeah. They were perfect human co-stars to this. And the Turtles, you know what? I still think they look good. I still like that. And even with the technology, motion capture has come now. Like, I'm not super interested in seeing motion capture Turtles. I'm just not. I mean, I'm less interested in seeing Michael Bay produce Turtles, but the costume technology has come a long way, too. You could put people in costumes and make them look even better than this because it made the fighting look awesome. And, I mean, these people were, you know, Eddie Reyes Jr. was in Secret of the Ooze, but he was Donatello in the first movie. So you had people actually performing these fight scenes, and it's just so good. And we could do a whole episode about how much I love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Specifically, this movie, it's just so good. I love it. It's my favorite movie with
I think it's pretty obvious, being that you showed up to the podcast today rocking a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles shirt.
Oh, yeah, I am.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. I think maybe it was just a product of when the movies came out. I do recall seeing the first one in the theaters, and I liked it. By the time the second one came around, I think I was actually taking karate. So, oh my God, I loved the second one. I know it's, you got your ninja rap, which is, not needed.
I still love the second one.
I think I like that a little bit better just because of the tone. I didn't grow up reading the comics.
See, the tone was...
I grew up with the show, and that was closer to the show, why I liked it
more. Yeah, Toot lost a lot of the darkness and went more towards the wackiness, but I still love Two, but...
Three sucks.
Honestly, never watch Three.
Ooh, yeah. It's not good.
Yeah, I skip as much as I love Turtles, skipped Three. But I like both Aprils. Like, it's hard for me to pick between Paige Turco or Judith Hoag. Like, I think they were both really, really good Aprils. And
Hoag seemed very much 90s kind of lady.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paige Turco, though. Nothing wrong with her.
No. Some of my also-rans, a couple obvious ones, E.T. came to mind. Probably a more obvious one, Wizard of Oz. Labyrinth I left off because they're...
Labyrinth and Neverending Story seem like you can make the same argument for either one.
Yeah, but Labyrinth, there isn't like Neverending Story, like Falcor is who I think of. When I think back on Labyrinth, like, yeah,
Bowie.
There's a lot of cool things, but I don't really think of one that
Bowie's
I
manhood.
Bowie's junk, yeah, at the level of the puppets. And then speaking of puppets, I tried to keep it to co-stars. Dark Crystal, I adore. I love that movie. I still watch it. I watch it with my kids. But there's no humans in it, and I wanted to keep it with a human, non-human interaction. But as far as puppet movies go, Dark Crystal, I still adore, and I love that movie.
I kind of wanted to put any of the Star Wars movies on. They're aliens. You could find a non-human in any
especially
of those.
Especially the Christmas special.
Yeah, you could do that. That was pretty much full of Wookiees. But obviously didn't put Star Wars on there. Ted was one that came to mind.
Ted's a good one,
love that little guy. I mentioned Caddyshack, especially in the second one. That little furry groundhog or whatever he was, much more of a character than in the first one. I don't even think it was really supposed to be in the first one all that much. That's really kind of an interesting story. Even Bill Murray wasn't supposed to be in the first one all that much, but they really kind of found out what the... And I guess that's the genius of Harold Ramis, to see what he had and say, okay, no, we need to tweak things because Bill Murray is this movie, and so is the little groundhog guy. And they cranked it up for the second one, but I left both of them off, as well as another one that would have been very on the nose, but maybe would have been the best movie of any of the ones that we mentioned, and that was Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Very much looking forward to the sequel on that, but we've talked about it a lot. The performance that Andy Serkis turned in, tremendous. It's a damn shame he didn't get nominated for an Oscar, but that's a really good movie, and it's starring a non-human. I guess it wouldn't have fit your list because it was CG, but I guess that's an example of, if you're going to do CG, that's how you do it, and you do it correctly.
If we missed any, if there's any you like, because we didn't put the Muppets on there. We didn't put any of the Muppets movies
not
on.
Not a one.
I love the original. I love the, not the original. I do love all the original Muppets, but the Jason Segel one,
yes.
I really enjoyed. I'm excited for Muppets Most Wanted.
Yes.
Taking the girls to see that. I took the day off work the day it comes out, so we're going to catch a matinee of that. So I'm excited. So, I mean, any of the Muppets movies could have made it on there. If we missed any, let us know. Facebook.com/moviesonup. Twitter @moviesonup. moviesonup@gmail.com. Check us out on iTunes or on Stitcher, or just find our RSS feed. That can all be found at moviesonup.com. If you have episode ideas, send them to us, because we got nothing.
We're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, so if you want more of me, check out @DaveBasella on Twitter, davebasella.com, or Eric and Dave Talking with Eric and Dave. We just put up a rerun of our first episode from 2 years ago this week. That one was a fun thing to listen to. We're coming up on 2 years here, so if you have ideas for what you want us to do for our 2-year celebration, because we don't have
it
any.
Doesn't involve much effort or planning.
Yeah. So, but that's it. We'll be back next week with something. We'll keep it under wraps for now. But
it worked so well last time.
Yeah, you'll find out next week. We'll probably find out shortly before that. But until then,
keep it up.